We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
I'm Chinee Ogwumike.
I'm Lisa Leslie, and we're very excited to tell you about our new podcast with Blue Wire, Front and Center.
Lisa and I are breaking down what's going on in our lives, in the world, and keeping it 100.
We're also learning from amazing guests as well, like Emmanuel Acho.
People that show love to me, I forever got their back.
Vivica A. Fox.
If the foundation isn't right, then the rest of it's going to go wrong from there.
And more.
Subscribe to Front and Center today.
Welcome to In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots podcast. We're your hosts, Shamit Duup and Mason Ginsburg, and this is All Pelicans All the Time.
Welcome to another episode of In the Know. We are continuing our series for all 29 teams, just chopping it up, talking about potential trade options, talking about the season, free agency, things like that. What better way to spend an offseason? And so we are joined by Salman Ali, who is part of ESPN 975 in Houston and runs the Red Nation Hoops Blue Wire podcast. So, doing a crossover episode here. So how you doing? Thanks for joining.
Yeah, I'm doing all right. Happy to be here. How you guys doing?
Pretty good. Podcast number two on the night for us. Just talk some Cavs, and then we'll hit on some Rockets ball too.
Yeah, hold on. Like, but before we get into that, like, are you guys like drained? Like, when you guys do back to back podcasts like this, because I can't do that. I'm a writer by trade. I sense that you guys are too. So podcasting is already unnatural for me. So are you guys like on an energy scale 1 to 10? Where are you guys at right now?
Well, it's a couple of things. One is Shamit's being nice because the rest of my week's kind of a mess, and so we're doing two in one night just to knock a couple out. And the other is, we're trying to get more content out there, and I think this is a good way to do it. And so we're trying to be flexible and making, if people can make certain times work, we'll just crank them out.
So my energy scale was a -2 before this podcast because I had gone on a run and just gotten back in time to get on for the other podcast. Hadn't eaten dinner, done that podcast. It was Cavs. And then I texted Mason. I was like, can we ask Salman if we can push it back like 10 minutes to give me some time to scarf down some food. So I was at an all-time low, got some food in me, and we're trending back to neutral here and ready to give it a push through this podcast, the second one.
Look, nothing motivates me more than talking about Tillman Fertitta. So let's just jump in.
Yeah, we had a pretty big segment on Tillman on our previous podcast, and a lot has happened since that podcast came out. So we had discussed it in the context of hiring coaches and whether he'd be willing to pony up the money to hire Ty Lue. And well, Daryl Morey stepped down since then, and the coaching direction has gone a different way. And just wanted to get your thoughts on what this past week has been and this whole Daryl Morey situation and why you think Daryl stepped down and all of that. Just if you want to word vomit it, go for it.
Yeah, this is a pretty precarious situation for the Rockets. I can't remember a time from my, you know, my short sprint, you know, covering the Rockets, like from 2014 till now, that it's been more precarious. Like maybe that one season where they, you know, they just, their last year with Dwight Howard, they went 41-41, got knocked out in the first round, and they had to hire a new coach, and they had a bunch of cap space. So that was uncharted territory for them. But this is, I did not see Daryl Morey stepping down at all. Like I thought, like this completely threw me off guard. The Rockets have more question marks going into this offseason than any offseason in the past 20 years, by far.
What's the biggest question? There's a lot of them, but what's the biggest one?
Well, I mean, first of all, Raphael Stone, the guy who's been promoted to general manager, has some big shoes to fill in terms of Daryl Morey. Like Daryl was in terms of figureheads for the organization, there was nobody bigger. The only guy that came close was James Harden himself. Like for the organization, like I can't think of anybody that was as widely known as Daryl Morey. And it is crazy that Raphael Stone is stepping in, and you know, a lot of people still don't know who this guy is, right? Like this is Rockets in-house counsel since 2005. He's been slowly promoted up the ranks, but again, the Rockets have lost a lot of front office talent, you know, Monty McNair, Gerson Rosas, and you know, Raphael was kind of the next guy up on the chain. And because these guys have been kind of plucked away from the Rockets so fast, not many people have gotten to know Raphael. So that's going to be interesting. That's one question mark. Number two is definitely their head coaching search, which, you know, they're, you guys in New Orleans know how this is like. This is a pretty big decision the Rockets have to make within the next couple of weeks. I assume they're going to make that decision this week. And, you know, that was probably going to be their biggest question mark going into this. But now that, I mean, you're one of the best general managers in the league just stepped down, like, and you're having to replace him with somebody who is a relative unknown, been with the organization for a while, but still a relative unknown. So there's a bunch of more question marks that have just popped up behind that. And I don't know. I genuinely don't know where the Rockets go from here. That second round exit against the Lakers is pretty ugly. They start off the series strong, but I mean, in general, throughout the postseason, they've been kind of underperforming. Had that first round go seven games to the Thunder, should not have gone that long. And they just fell apart against the Lakers. I mean, just completely fell apart. That last game was not even remotely close. So there's just a bunch of questions they have to answer about their roster, about their head coaching vacancy, about Tillman Fertitta, which I'm guessing you guys are going to press me on in a couple minutes, but just a bunch of stuff there. I don't even know which direction to go in. I mean, I guess you guys, I mean, this is your podcast. You can ask me whatever you guys want.
Yeah, there is a lot to unpack there. I guess we can just start with the main topic first, which is Daryl Morey. What do you think contributed to his stepping down?
I really do think it's personal reasons. And this is not a cop-out. This is not me, you know, caping for Tillman Fertitta at all. I'm just, from the reading the facts on the ground, reading everything that's been reported, nothing's been reported to contradict anything other than this is Daryl Morey stepping down because he's gassed and he wants to step away from the game for a little bit. He may come back into the NBA, but it really does seem like he wants to spend this time with his family. He's one of the few general managers that actually went to the bubble. and spent time with the Rockets. He was away from his family for like, you know, 3-4 months. Like, you got to figure that's got to have him thinking about everything, you know, evaluating life in a different way. I know a lot of people are doing that in the midst of this pandemic. And, you know, for Darryl at that time away from his family, I gotta believe that that had something to do with it. And his, both of his kids are taking gap years from school. So I'm guessing he wants to spend that time with them. And, you know, Darryl is a really intelligent guy. Like, he doesn't have to be in basketball. He's the kind of guy who can make tens of millions of dollars in a different industry if he wanted to. He just chose basketball. And, you know, he has a bunch of other opportunities he wants to, he can explore if he wants to. I mean, he, even as a creative, like, he wrote this play, Small Ball, a couple years ago, that he wanted to just explore that side of his creativity. So I don't know what direction he wants to go in. Maybe he still does want to come back into basketball. He, it seems like he hasn't ruled it out, but it does seem for the time being that this is a decision, you know, solely based off of personal decisions, personal reasons, and perhaps the state of the franchise kind of accelerated it. You know, the fact that the Rockets are a team with no cap flexibility and few draft picks moving forward, it's kind of bleak right now. So perhaps that situation accelerated his decision to step down.
Yeah, and so that was kind of where I wanted to go with this. It's kind of a tangential question. Wind the clock back a year, or wherever, whenever the last offseason was. I lose track of time in 2020, but with the Chris Paul trade for Russell Westbrook. And by all accounts, that was not a Daryl Morey-esque type of move. Put that in context with what his recent decision. Do you feel like a year ago he was thinking that this, he may feel like it might be time to step away? And in that respect, he said, well, you know, if it doesn't work out, I won't be around to see with everything crash and burn. Or do you feel like it was just a genuine, he's trying to do what his star wants, what the rest of the organization wants, to really put the team in a place to what they believe is a better chance to win a title, whether or not that is true. What can you kind of talk about that trade a year ago and then how it compares to the situation right now?
So there's probably not one clear answer for this, right? And I know that's not the answer you guys want, but I think after that final game against Golden State, something happened between Chris Paul and James Harden, some sort of verbal altercation in the locker room that we haven't been able to properly ascertain, because the players aren't going to talk about that, right? And you know, it's not that reporters haven't tried, but something happened between those two. Those guys had separate press conferences after the game, which was a little bizarre, but Chris Paul had an incident with the media beforehand. So it didn't look as bizarre, but after finding that out, it definitely shed a lot more light on the situation. So I think there was a fracture there. And before both players ever got to review, like, you know, repair that fracture, the Rockets saw this opportunity to, I'm guessing, trade for a younger superstar, and they thought that Chris Paul was on his last legs. I disagreed with that. I thought the trade was not good at the time, and I'm guessing they just thought this asset, Russell Westbrook, over the next 3 or 4 years is going to be better than Chris Paul over the next 3. So I'm guessing that's the calculus that, you know, the organization was making. And you're right, it did not seem like a Daryl move. I think Daryl was somebody who was a huge backer of Chris Paul. In fact, reporting came out this week that it seems like Daryl was someone who was really high on Chris Paul, even after that season where he didn't look himself. And, you know, Chris Paul was really injured that year. Like, he had he was coming off the hamstring injury that forced him to miss the rest of that Golden State series that almost ended up with the Rockets in the NBA Finals. So he was a banged up guy. And I thought, you know, the Rockets should have let it play out another year, but they wanted to jump the gun. My sense is that I don't think Daryl Morey was the loudest voice in that room. I'll put it that way. I think Daryl was a part of that decision. I think he was obviously a part of the negotiations. I think he definitely reached out to Sam Presti and was interested in Russell Westbrook. I don't think when it came decision time, I'm not sure if he was the loudest voice in that room. And whether that voice was James Harden, whether that voice was Tillman Fertitta, we still don't know yet. But that's my feel on that.
So I hate to put it this way. Is this the beginning of the end?
Well, we'll see. I mean, it really does depend on what Rafael Stone decides to do in the offseason. And, you know, what we can learn from him as a general manager, right? Again, a lot is unknown about how he chooses to operate. I know the Rockets aren't going away from analytics. Like, Eli Wittes is not going to let that happen, which is their assistant general manager, someone who was hired by Daryl Morey. So I think they're gonna continue down this micro ball path, and I think they're going to continue to rely on analytics. I don't know if they're going to be able to make the same kind of value move that Daryl was able to do over the past couple of years. And what the Rockets choose to do with their non-taxpayer mid-level exception is going to be a big indicator here, because, you know, there's all these questions about Tillman Fertitta, and I think they're valid, right? Like, what his role in the Russell Westbrook trade and, you know, his business dealings, whatever. But the biggest question by far since he bought the team is, would he be willing to pay the luxury tax, right? And so far, he's talked a big game, but he has not put his money where his mouth is, right? And this is the kind of summer where, like, it's put up or shut up, man. You know, either you're going to spend that non-taxpayer mid-level exception to put yourself in deep into the luxury tax, or you're not. And that's the kind of message if you're a fan, you're looking to for Tillman Fertitta, because, you know, it's only been 4 years, right? But this is a very pivotal, it's been a very pivotal offseason for the Rockets, because that kind of a decision tells you where his head's at in terms of spending on the organization, spending on the roster. And, you know, I reserve judgment, right? Because it's, again, like with owners, I always say, give it at least 5 to 10 years. I said that when Tillman bought the team, and I'm saying that now. Give it 5 to 10 years before you evaluate the team. But this offseason in particular is a big pivotal moment for the Rockets as far as whether or not Tillman's willing to spend that kind of money on the roster. We'll see. I mean, again, a lot of question marks here. A lot of different things you can unpack if you really want to go that way.
Yeah. So the whole, like, you know, give it 5 to 10 years, what is the window with James? And is he going to be moved? Is that on the table at some point? Not obviously now this season. I mean, with him and Russ, you're going to be somewhat of a contender, if not a contender outright, no matter what. But, you know, what is the future with him? Do you foresee a parting at any point?
It's very possible. I mean, so if they don't make the Western Conference this year, I mean, James might be the one to force that trade, right? James may be the one to come to the organization and say, listen, I want more than this, and I don't think you guys can give me more than this. Can you guys explore the market for me? You know, if they fall short, you know, you have to get in a room with James and be like, you know, give us some more time. Maybe we can put this together. If you're the organization, like, listen, the whole point of a rebuild is to find a player like James Harden, right? Like, that's the absolute peak of a kind of player you can find in a rebuild. Very rarely do you find players like Zion Williamson, right, in the draft. It's really hard to get those kind of guys. So the whole point of a rebuild is to get someone like James. So I think if you're the Rockets, you keep James until he makes the decision to come to the front office and say, I want out. Because, again, I don't know what kind of direction they want to go in as an organization, but I'm just watching the NBA over the past 20 years, it's really hard to find guys like that and to rebuild.
Yeah, for sure. Well, let's talk the rest of that roster. I mean, are there things that you see beyond just having around the edges in free agency with you know, cap exceptions? Are there any are there guys that they're going to bring back from last year? Are there guys that you see maybe as potential trade, guys that they could move on from or try to maybe switch for a different position? Anything that you that pops to you, or do you think they're just going to try to run it back?
Yeah, I suspect they're going to bring their core back and they're going to try to rebuild around the edges, but I mean, when you look at their resources, they're just so limited in what they can do, right? Unless they really choose to spend that non-taxpayer mid-level exception. Even if they do choose to spend that, there's going to be a lot of different teams using their mid-level exception to try and get guys. And the kind of guys they're going to get are going to be highly sought after because this free agent marketplace is pretty dry. Like the, it's a pretty barren market, and a lot of the same guy, a lot of the same players are going to be highly sought after by the same teams. So it's going to be a really competitive spot for the Rockets. They're probably going to have to convince a good player to take less money than he can get anywhere else. And that's tough. That's tough. At the same time, I mean, what else can you do? I mean, unless you're really, so if there's going to be fireworks with the Rockets this summer, right? If they make a big move, I suspect they'll do it around the draft, right? I suspect they'll trade one of their, if they want to make a big splash, they trade one of their veteran pieces in the draft, use that player they get in the draft, and try to use that player for another trade, right? That's the only logical move for them left on the table, because as far as their pieces right now, it's not attractive enough for a team like, let's say a young team trying to get off a really good veteran player. A young team trying to get off a really good veteran player is not going to want to trade with the Rockets because they don't have any future assets, right? So you want to be able to get that kind of an asset, and the only way you can do that is if you trade a really good vet in the draft. So that's the only way you foresee fireworks. I suspect they're going to bring Ben McLemore back on his player option because it's so dirt cheap. They'll try to get Jeff Green, but I think Jeff Green's going to be sought after too. And I think Austin Rivers is going to walk away. I just think his role on the team has been pretty limited the past couple of years. The guard rotation's pretty deep, and it's been hard for him to find some oxygen there. So I think he's going to be a player that's probably going to walk away from the team.
Philly might be able to use Austin. I hear there's a Rivers over there that has interest in him. No, I mean, I think that's interesting. And you know, like you said, there's limited windows of what you guys can do with your roster. Do you think what happened in the bubble is kind of a fluke in terms of the collapse, the whole Dunwell House situation? Do you think it's a symptom of the media narrative around Harden, where it just, he kind of fizzles out or comes up short in the postseason?
No, I don't think it's a fluke. Like, the Lakers were the best team all year, right? Like, the way they performed in the bubble and the way they pretty much decimated the Rockets when they decided to play Anthony Davis at center and ended the series, I don't think that's a fluke. I think they definitely underperformed, though. Like, I think in the latter parts of that series, they definitely could have played better, even without Daniel House. Like Daniel House is an excuse. You can't use that to get blown out by 20, right? Like, Daniel House is not going to prevent you from getting blown out by 20. I think there was real effort issues at the end of that series. I think James was, for the most part, fine in the playoffs. I thought he had a decent playoff performance. I didn't have a problem with him. But defensively, it's very clear they're not there yet. Like, they need to be top 10 to really compete with these other teams. And for the most part, for the past 2 years, they've been pretty much middle of the pack. That's what's separating them from teams like the Lakers, teams like the Clippers, and teams like the Bucks, right? The Bucks were one of these top end teams all year, right? I know they underperformed in the playoffs, but they're at that level of team. And if you're Houston, if your goal in the offseason should be to try and improve your defense to a level where you can get back to, you know, you're probably not going to get back to 65 wins and nearly on the precipice of the NBA finals again, but can you get back to the Western Conference and maybe get to the high 50 win team area, right? Can you be a top 10 defense and a top 5 offense again? That's the real question for the Rockets.
There's a defensive coach in New Orleans I think you guys might be interested in. I think his name is Jeff Bizdelic. Maybe familiar, and
yeah,
maybe he can put the Rockets defense back on track, right?
Yeah, the Rockets really miss just having a defensive voice in the locker room, right? They haven't had that in a while. I suspect that's why they're looking at guys like Jeff Van Gundy and Steven Silas. They need that strong voice because they haven't had that emphasis on the defensive end in a while. I suspect they're still probably going to switch everything defensively, which is going to be interesting because if Jeff Van Gundy is the coach, that switching is a very modern defense, right? It's something that's come along in the last 5 years. Is Jeff going to be okay with that? Is he adaptable to that? Is he someone who's recognized the modern NBA and adjusted accordingly? That's going to be a question if they hire Jeff.
The wait is finally over. Football's back.
You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win the season. From games, spreads, and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on the season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier, like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through December 31st.
Yeah, so what are you looking for in a coach? And what are your expectations there? Are you happy with the list that's out there? And you mentioned kind of having a voice or structure that might bring about a defensive identity. Do you think offensively things change, or is it still going to be like a lot of iso ball?
So as far as what the Rockets need, I think what the Rockets need that defensive first mentality again. And offensively, they definitely need to shake some things up, at least play some more pick and roll like you did 2 or 3 years ago, right? Like they have slowly diverged from a pick and roll team to straight isolation, right? And that's effective in the regular season, right? It's going to get you a top, like James Harden shooters and isolation basketball will get you a top three offense in the regular season. The postseason, I think you need some diversity in that offense. So, you know, it's going to be on guys like Brett Gunning's assistant coach for the Rockets. He's a really good offensive mind to really add some dynamism in that offense, you know, shake some things up, add some body movement, add some player movement, add some ball movement. Like they have been far too stagnant for the past few years. It's going to be on James to move off the ball, which he hasn't been willing to do for, you know, the past 7 years since he's been in Houston. Like he hasn't been that guy for a while. So he's going to have to change a little bit. And I think, you know, they're going to have to do a lot of stuff to really compete in the playoffs with these top end teams offensively, because I think what they have done for the past year, right? Like I think they were good offensively 2 years ago and 3 years ago in the playoffs. They just ran up against the Warriors, who are really great defensively, right? I think last year they just were not, like, especially in that Thunder series, they were not the same offensive team you're used to seeing from Houston.
So I am curious to take it back to the roster for one last kind of radical question. What do you feel like the market for Russell Westbrook is? I know that that's a hard question given his salary and the amount of years left, but what, you know, do you think there is a market for him if they wanted to try to move Russ this offseason? Would there be any appetite around the league, and B, what would it take to move off that contract? And I realize that may not even be something that the Rockets want to entertain, because honestly, with all the draft capital that they're trading to Oklahoma City, like what's the reason, unless you think you're improving your team. But I'm curious if you've thought about this at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a hard conversation. Like, do the Rockets have anything to add onto his contract? No. So they can't trade him. Yeah. His contract's not movable.
Is there a lateral move that you could see a team being moderately interested in, or just like, is a non-starter, it's never going to happen, or at least not next year or so?
Yeah. I mean, you know, you can always see a dumb team, right? Like trading for a contract like Russ, but I don't think, you know, over the past 2 or 3 years, you've seen a lot of these dumb general managers kind of fade out, and it's becoming like a really low risk proposition. Like it's hard to find those teams, right? Like, sure, you're going to see your Sacramentos and your Phoenixes, but even Sacramento, like they hired Monty McNair, and they're reshaping their front office, right? So those dumb teams are becoming few and far between. So I don't think there's a team out there that's going to take that contract. You know, maybe if you could find a team with a star that's like one star away from winning a championship, right? And like that star is the problem with that theory is that star has to be malleable to fit with Russ. And there's just, it's hard to find stars mm-hmm. that can fit alongside Russ in such a clean manner.
You know, what's hilarious is that, well, two things. One, you guys have contributed heavily to the fact that there are less dumb teams in the league with Minnesota and the Kings getting people from the Daryl Morey tree.
Seriously.
So you have nothing but yourself to blame there. But the second thing is, you know, if the Pelicans still had Anthony Davis, I could totally see them talking themselves into trading for Russ. I could see it. I could totally. That would have been a very Dell Demps move. To trade for this bloated contract, but he's a star and, you know, he's kind of like that alpha personality that Davis is in, and they would have talked themselves into it, and you would have had a partner, and you would have gotten some, you know, contracts that took Russ off your hands, frankly. And the Pelicans.
Dell Demps catching a drive-by shooting from you guys. Wow. By the way, like, how do you guys feel about Dell Demps as a coach? Like, do you think he'll be good in that role?
He's never done it. I have no clue. I think I like Demps. I have a good relationship with him, and I think
so he doesn't listen to this podcast, basically.
He may have once upon a time. But I think he's a smart enough individual to figure out the coaching stuff. And he was a really, really good scout. When he was with the Spurs, and he spent a lot of time in the G League with the Toros, the Spurs affiliate or whatever that was. And the Spurs mafia takes care of their own. And so the Jazz is just full up with ex-Spurs people, with Dennis Lindsay and Quinn Snyder and all of that. And so I think he's going to fit in very well there, especially because there's not much decision-making responsibility on him.
What's interesting is Dennis Lindsay is also another ex-Rocket GM. Like the league is just full with these ex-Rockets GMs, and it's funny, like the day that Daryl steps down, it almost looks like their front office is kind of barren, and there's not really someone that's very clearly, you know, able to step up and take that job. It's unfortunate timing if you're Houston.
I like Shamet, I can't really speak to how good of a coach Dell will be, but I think it's a very innovative move by Utah, even if it's just based off of the relationship between coach and Dell. I think it provides a unique perspective that you don't always have on the bench, as someone who's been in the front office and kind of like speak that language and be that the other side, essentially. I think it works both ways too. If you have a guy who's been on the bench for a while and bring him up to a front office role, I think that also has value too. So in that respect, I think it'll be good. I just don't, you know, who's to know what kind of coach Dell's going to be. But funny enough, we had that was the Dell Demps is the second straight Pelicans GM to go to coaching, because Jeff Bauer did the same thing for New Orleans, like. A decade ago. Yeah, just weird stuff. But let's see.
I think it's a good time to transition it to the Pelicans, since we've already talked about it so much. So one of the things we do to open up the Pelicans conversation is to ask you, you know, what do you think the Pelicans' outlook is? What do you make of their roster? And I guess let's get your thoughts on that before asking you the trade piece.
I mean, they have some blue chip prospects right up there, right? With Zion Williamson and Brandon Ingram. That's a really good starting point, though. The fact that you have seemingly your cornerstone pieces already set in place is a good spot. Now, how you fill out the roster around those guys is going to be difficult, but I think when you're talking about team building, that's always the hardest part, to find your cornerstone pieces. And I think they already got that done. And the biggest question I have left is A, how do they fill out the roster around these guys? And B, how healthy is Zion going to be for the next couple of years? Because I'm sure you guys have already talked about that, right? Like that's got to be the biggest question mark for them moving forward.
Yep, 100%.
Yeah. It's a million-dollar question around BI and Zion, how you build around them. And I think it's, you know, it's not just a next year question, it's long term, because they got a couple guys who are coming up in a year from now in restricted free agency. And then there's obviously a more pressing question around Drew Holiday and what the move is there. So yep, it's a Griffin's got his work cut out for him over the next 12 months or so.
Yeah, do you see Drew Holiday as a player that wants to stay with this young core, or do you think he wants to expand out? Because I mean, this core is actually pretty flexible, in that I think they'll still be a good team next year if they find the right pieces around these guys. And I don't think they should spend too much draft capital, but if they find the right piece around these guys in free agency, I think they'll be able to contend for the playoffs next year. But I'm not sure if Drew Holiday sees himself in that picture. I think I could see it both ways. He's spent a lot of time there now, right? And I wonder if he wants to, you know, to kind of explore around the league, you know, perhaps another team that is on the brink of perhaps winning a championship or going all the way.
It's a very interesting question that is not frequently enough posed the way you posed it, which is, what does Drew want? You know, it's like the Pelicans have him for another year, and I'm sure they would, if they, you know, kind of figure out that they don't like the potential returns in the trade for him, I'm sure Griff would be the first one to tell you that he would love to keep Drew Holiday in New Orleans for the rest of his career. But the question's fair is, and I think that the respect is absolutely mutual. He has endeared himself to the city of New Orleans. He and his wife, I mean, they're part of the city now. So I think that that's all valid. But to your point, if he doesn't see the team contending on the timeline he wants to contend on, then I don't think you'd ever see anything public with Drew. I think it's something he would have a conversation about with Griff in the background, and it would never be something that he forced. But I don't have a good answer to the question. All I can tell you is that I feel like he loves being in New Orleans, and he's well respected by everyone in the city. I mean, he just won the Teammate of the Year award. And so that's not, you know, it seems kind of flimsy maybe on the surface, but I think it goes more to show what type of character that Drew has.
Yeah. So the only thing I'll add to that is February, there was team sniffing around for Drew Holiday. And Drew Holiday basically told David Griffin, I want to be here. Don't trade me. Don't ship me out. I want to kind of grow with this young team. Now, a lot has changed since February, especially with the world. There's circumstances are completely different. And it could be that Drew wants a bigger stage. I mean, his buddy Anthony Davis just won a championship, right? And so to kind of get that recognition, to compete for something more meaningful, I think – it's very possible Drew pursues that route. And if he does, I think the Pelicans will try their best to accommodate him to a destination that works in that regard. And the good thing about that is that contenders are salivating over the prospect of potentially acquiring Drew. I mean, Brooklyn is very excited if they could land Drew Holiday. Denver would be a really good fit for him. They played really well.
I can see the Bucks sniffing around too.
Right, exactly. The Bucks, you know, you name all these teams and all, you can be like, yeah, Drew's a great fit there. And so it all come down to which one of these teams are going to blow away the Pelicans in terms of an offer, because I don't think they will move him easily. And there is, I think, a possibility where, here's what I think is most likely going to happen. They're going to approach Drew and they'll be like, you want to sign an extension? And see how he feels about that. And I think the extension conversation is going to color his future, whether he's going to stay or not. And there's a complete possibility they agree on a number, they sign him 2 to 3 more years, and that kind of kicks that trade can a little bit further and gives you a little bit more leverage, whereas a team could be like, oh, well, Drew has an option year after this. He's probably going to opt out. We don't really have much security. We don't want to give up all this for a rental. And, you know, if he's locked in on an extension, that part of the negotiation goes away and maybe you find yourself some better offers. But yeah, so given that we've talked about Drew Holiday and you already are aware of the fact that the cornerstone pieces are Brandon Ingram and Zion Williamson, is there any Pelican non-Brandon Ingram, non-Zion Williamson that you would like to see on the Rockets? And, you know, what kind of offer do you envision yourself making if that's the case?
So we kind of talked about it before the podcast, but Derek Favors is the kind of guy who I think a lot of teams can get for a fairly reasonable price, right? And I think that the market's going to be, again, saturated with these role players. And Derek Favors, I think, on the lower end of those role players. And I think if you're talking about a gettable target for Houston, I think Derek Favors is definitely one of those guys who, you know, probably not going to start for you, but a really nice, you know, reserve piece for you, especially as you get deeper into the playoffs and you just need bodies at that point. Derek Favors is the kind of guy who's versatile enough to play in micro ball, I think, as a small ball center, and can still give you production.
Favors is interesting because, like you mentioned, there's a lot to like about him. He's a good rebounder. He can theoretically protect the rim, even though this past year he wasn't quite so good at it, maybe because of injury concerns. One thing I will say is that, you know, if the Rockets turn into a heavy pick and roll offense, he's probably not your man. You know, if you want a little bit more of a boingy vertical threat that can finish lobs, and I'm not sure Favors is that kind of athlete anymore, but his market, I don't expect it to be more than that taxpayer MLE, that 5.4 or whatever that number is going to be this year. I'd be shocked if he makes something more than that. And if he wants to make something more than that, I'd want the Pelicans to pursue a sign and trade where, you know, they have bird rights on him. They could boost up that salary number a little bit and push him to a team that he wants to go to and maybe get a small asset or a fake asset in return.
Yeah. And if you're the Pelicans, you can afford to kind of sell off some of these pieces for future assets. You know, the players on the roster might not like it, but I mean, it's, you're in that stage where you can still acquire draft picks, and later on, maybe you pile up these draft picks in a composite kind of trade, perhaps, you know, maybe not a star player, but a really good player becomes available on the market when, you know, Brandon Ingram and Zion Williamson are in their mid-20s, you know, and then you can use all those draft picks that you compiled in this time, or these young players that you acquired in this time, and then flip that for that really good player. And then that contention window for the Pelicans is right there, right? Like, I think we're nowhere near that area where we can talk about contention for the Pelicans, but if they make a really strong playoff push next year, right? I don't think this year was really that strong of a push, right? And they had some health concerns, obviously, so I can't really put too much on that. But if they make a really strong playoff push this year, then you can talk about perhaps, you know, packaging some of these players, like, you know, Josh Hart, and, you know, some Lonzo Ball, maybe some of these other young players, for a really good player that becomes available on the market. I don't know if it's going to get you a star player. I doubt it, but I think it'll get you a really strong player that can help put together this roster in a really neat kind of way.
You're speaking Schmidt's language right now, except I think we were just talking about this on the last podcast about that trajectory, but really going for it. And so you have those players. You also have the picks from your own picks, Los Angeles picks. So there's a, depending on, you know, how much you value those, and obviously the Lakers treasure chest is not off to a good start after they won the title just now. But you still got some assets to load up on and hopefully pull the trigger on something like that. But
and listen, guys, David Griffin is a really good general manager. Yeah. Like, he's a really, really good general manager. I don't think he got enough credit for what he did in Cleveland with the limited resources he had to build around LeBron, but once you're a contender, David Griffin will find those guys for you. And I think if they can keep a lot of these star players happy long enough for that contention window to come, Griffin's a really nice guy to have around for that window.
Man, we just got off a Cavs podcast and they said the exact same thing. And so I'm excited for the Pelicans to potentially get to that position. Obviously, we haven't seen much of David Griffin taking a team from scratch to that position. But like you mentioned, Zion Williamson and Brandon Ingram are a fantastic starting point to take you in that direction. But yeah, anyone that has 2 seconds to listen to me, I'll tell them, be like, yo, you know, 3 years from now, I want them to put it all in on the table for Devin Booker or Karl Anthony Towns. One of those guys, some disgruntled star that's going to become available on the market that lines up with the Pelicans timeline fits well as a piece and just go for it all.
And what I really like about this team is none of these young prospects are theoretical, right? Like, we know that Brandon Ingram and Zion have all-star potential. Whereas like a few years ago, we were talking about Minnesota in this kind of way. And I think a lot of us had suspicions that Andrew Wiggins was never going to be that kind of player. We know Brandon Ingram and Zion can be those type of players. So it's not like a fake good young team. I think it's a really, it's actually a legitimate good young prospect team. And I think that helps in your aid for a really good coach. That to me is what's going to be interesting. What kind of coach do they want to bring in? Do they want to bring in someone like Monty Williams, develop that young core, or do they want to accelerate the timeline a little bit further and go with Stan Van Gundy? I like Stan Van Gundy. I think he can stay around for both iterations of the team. But typically what you see in these situations is the team hires the young coach, and then as they progress, they fire that coach, and then they get the real coach, the guy who's going to, take you over the top. So their interest in Stan Van Gundy is really interesting to me, because I suspect that Stan Van Gundy wants to coach contender. And I wonder if the Pelicans, by interviewing Stan Van Gundy and really taking him seriously, are telling the NBA, you know what, we want to go for it. Screw this waiting around crap. We want to, really package these assets together and really go for it on the trade market, really go for it for the playoffs next year. That's the kind of message you send to the rest of the NBA by really looking at a coach like Stan Van Gundy very seriously.
And so I think it's a little bit more than that. And this is a point that Schmidt actually made on our last podcast around the type of coach Stan Van Gundy is. And the way he coaches compared to what the team looked like on the floor this past year, which is, a young team that sometimes looked disinterested in trying to go get their own and not really playing as a team all the time. And so Stan is a guy who's not going to tolerate that. At the same time, I think you're also right in that he's not going to want to coach a team that's rebuilding. So it's probably, I would imagine the pitch to Stan Gundy is something to the effect of, this is your team. You've got it for as long as you can, create that positive trajectory. And so he's a guy who I think you can also rely on with a team of young guys, but also hopefully is that guy who can help take the next step. And if he's not, then you're right. They make a move and they go find the guy who really will take that team over the top. So I think, I was really excited personally for the possibility of Lou. Obviously that didn't work out, but I like the idea of Stan Van Gundy on this team a lot.
Yeah, I thought he was probably the most underrated coach on the market. Like him and Dave Yeager. I think Dave Yeager doesn't get enough love in terms of how good of an X's and O's tactician he is. Like, he is always the guy on League Pass where I'm constantly like rewinding the play. Like, what the fuck did he just draw up? I'm sorry, can I swear on this podcast?
Go for it.
Yeah, like what did he just draw up out of the timeout? Like, Dave Yeager is always that guy. And you talk to other coaches around the NBA, he's always the guy that they're stealing from. So I thought he was an underrated coach. And Stan Van Gundy, I just didn't think a lot of people were talking about him until his name got brought up with this job. And I'm just like, yes, like, hire Stan Van Gundy, please. He is too good to be commentating on ABC right now. He can do that. Don't get me wrong. He's really good at that. I mean, him and his brother are really entertaining on the microphone on these broadcasts, but he is way too good to be out of the NBA for as long as, he has been for the past couple of years. I want to see Stan Van Gundy back in the NBA again. I think he's a really intelligent guy. And I think he makes sense for any iteration of roster you want, but I suspect you'd have to convince him to kind of go through the growing pains of a young roster. Though, who knows? He did it in Orlando. So
yeah, I mean, Orlando wasn't necessarily an old team when he took over. And even when he started his stint off in Miami before Riley took over, D Wade was very young. Wade and Redick talk about how he was pretty formative for their careers, and he taught him how to be real NBA players, which is, I think, exactly what some of these young guys need. Even Zion, Zion, as polished as he is with the media and all of that, there is a lot to learn of what happens on the court. And so I'm excited for potentially Stan bringing in that fire that he has. So you're right. I do agree he's an underrated coach that the Pelicans are looking at.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, we have a couple questions for you before we wrap this up. The one I've been asking every single guest here is, who is your all-time favorite Houston Rocket? And if it's James Harden, non-James Harden.
Oh, it's Yao Ming. 100% it's Yao Ming. It's like not like, and I think Yao Ming doesn't get enough love from the NBA community. That guy was really freaking good in his heyday. Like one of the best centers in the league at his peak. And like, he was right up there with Dwight, right up there with Shaq. And in terms of his two-way ability, like the Rockets were a top five defense every single year Yao Ming was in Houston. We don't talk enough about how good he was defensively. And his soft touch around the rim, his ability to shoot mid-range jumpers, I think he'd fare really good in the modern NBA. Like, he kind of gives me like Porzingis on steroids vibes, right? Like watching some of his old tape. Like I could see, like when I watch Kristaps Porzingis, like I see a lot of Yao Ming in him, except Yao Ming was a lot better with terms of the footwork and the defensive ability. But like, that's the kind of player he was. And he definitely captured my imagination as like a young Houstonian growing up and loving the game. Like I had a Yao Ming jersey growing up. I'm sure a lot of Houstonians did. Like, he was definitely that guy for me.
So at Summer League last year, he walked right by me. He was leaving one of the games that I think one of the CBA teams were playing. And he was leaving the arena and he was on the concourse and he walked right by me. And it was just this moment of, oh my God, this guy is absolutely enormous. Like, you know, he's tall, right? But it's one thing knowing he's tall and another being right next to him. You know, it wasn't that like, oh, he walked, you know, like he was like 10 feet away, 15 feet away. No, he walked literally right next. Like, I could have high fived him if I wanted to. I mean, his wingspan's enormous. He could high-five me from wherever. But, you know, it was just this moment of, man, this guy is absolutely enormous. And it was a surreal feeling to think no humans get that big.
What? I got a question that's the exact opposite. So what's the player you have, like, an irrational – hate's the wrong word, but just, like, you couldn't stand – how many minutes he was playing, however long he was on the team for. Is there a guy you just kind of wanted the team to be done with and just the relationship went on too long and you're just over it? Is there a Rockets player that comes to mind for you?
So this is probably my last stint as a fan with the Rockets, right? Like, Corey Brewer was that guy who just, I had no idea like why Kevin McHale was playing him in crunch time of key games. And same thing when JB Bickerstaff took over the game. Like, JB Bickerstaff accelerated Corey Brewer's minutes. As Corey Brewer was progressively getting worse as a basketball player, like, JB Bickerstaff was like, you know what? I need more of this. Played him like 40 minutes a game, and it was infuriating. Like, I heavily disliked Corey Brewer, and it had nothing to do with Corey Brewer the person. As we all know, like, Corey Brewer the person is awesome, but like, Corey Brewer the basketball player makes you want to pull your hair out.
Yeah, we've had several of those players. We currently have one. Actually, yeah, this is a good question to end the podcast. So Mason knows where I'm going with this. What's your opinion on Lonzo Ball, and what do you kind of see with his future there?
Yeah, like, Lonzo is that guy where, like, I think he's good, right? Like, I instinctually think he's good. I see the basketball qualities there. And then he'll have a week where I'm just like, yeah, I want to get rid of this guy, right? Like, if I'm New Orleans, I could totally see why you would want to trade him the first minute you can. But I think if you can find the right role for him, right? Like, Rondo's kind of a guy who he gets a lot of Rondo comparisons, but like, Rondo's kind of a guy who found his role in the NBA after bouncing around a while. And it could just be the case that the league kind of moved way too fast for Lonzo, and he's at that stage where, like, it's really hard to be this kind of a point guard when you can't shoot. So I do think Lonzo's good. I just think if you're talking about starting caliber point guard on a good playoff team, good. I don't know if he's that. I think he can be a good reserve for you. You know, I think he could be like a, you know, he doesn't have this similar skill set, obviously, but he can be like a Spencer Dinwiddie for you.
So that's funny because we have a slightly different perception of Lonzo in the sense that we view him more as a wing than a point guard because he just is allergic to driving the basketball and doing literally anything in the paint. But he's decent at spot up shooting three pointers, right? So he attempted around 6 or 7 a game this year, shot around 38%. His spot up three really came a long way, and he's 6'6". He rebounds the ball, theoretically can defend multiple positions. I do agree with you that it's probably going to take some bouncing around to figure out that for him to figure out that's his best role rather than him trying to make himself a point guard, which he's not And so I think when, if and when he does figure out that role, he'd be excellent next to a guy like James Harden, someone who is can control the offense at all times and can get to any spot on the floor. Because Harden can create a ton of catch and shoot threes for him, and then Lonzo can take some playmaking duties off of Harden's shoulder. But most importantly, he can really push the pace, defend those multiple positions, and I think that's kind of the fit that Lonzo needs. Yeah. And I think I just don't know if Lonzo realizes that.
Yeah, he has the potential to be really good defensively, and you're right. His frame gives him the flexibility to play not just like off guard. He can play wing, as you said, and Drew Holiday gives the Pelicans the flexibility to do that. So I'm hopeful. Like the moments where I see a positive Lonzo are just too much for me to just be like, give up on him as a really good NBA player. I think he can be that guy. I'm not sure if he's got that guy as a starter though. Like on a good team, I don't think he can be a starter.
Well, there you have it, folks. This was Salman Ali with the Rockets. Thank you for giving us your time and recapping what's been quite an eventful week for the Rockets in terms of upheaval, and good luck with the coaching hire.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Some cars are comfy on the inside, but don't have power on the outside. And some cars have the horsepower, but none of the comfort. I used to think there weren't any cars that were the total package. But that all changed when I got my Honda SUV. It's rugged and sophisticated. And right now, Honda has deals on the entire Honda SUV lineup. CR-V, HR-V, Pilot, Passport, you name it. So if you're looking for a car that's the total package, the only place you'll find it is at your local Honda dealer. Hurry before they're all gone.
It's happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure 4-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each 4-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour 4-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m., and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.